Welcome to Desertification Islandists Volume 9 with me, Dan Bottrell. And today I spoke to Carla Sanchez, who is a sustainability expert, someone that's worked across Europe and globally in terms of sustainability, net zero, ESG, all sorts of things. Brilliant guy, really insightful. Hope you enjoy the session. Welcome to Desertification Island Discs Volume 9. And today I'm delighted to be joined by my friend Carlos Sanchez. Carlos, hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Daniel, for inviting me for this.
My pleasure. So for those of you that don't know Carlos, Carlos is the Global Manager of Environment at PMI, at Philip Morris International. But he also posts some amazing things on LinkedIn, all around sustainability, climate change, net zero, ESG. And he is the master of stats and insights, I believe. So first of all, Carlos, I guess my first question is, where does your energy come from? You know, your and that kind of analytical insight that you have.
Look, it's been a full, let's say, somebody expressed that they've been in sustainability since they left the high school or the university. The passion for sustainability has come very late. So my background is in industrial engineering, and then the first part of my career, it was focused on automation. So dealing with robots and then going from factory to improve processes. But then I decided I wanted to understand a little bit more of the background on how companies decided to improve processes. And then after doing an MBA, I started working on energy efficiency and renewables that were very, very famous at that time. It was the 2007 that I started working in this area. And I worked as a consultant. I work also as business development manager for a big company like Johnson Controls, and also leading the energy efficiency for a big utility. And this drove me into my current company, Philip Morris, where I started leading the energy efficiency for the factories. But it was in 2015 that I was in charge, was asked to lead the environmental efforts for the company. And I can tell you, in 2015, there was not a big, let's say, push for SDGs, because they were about to be approved. Climate change was still not in the radar. But reporting started becoming big in this area. So I work on different frameworks and standards like CDP, or creating our first sustainability report. And then over time, I was able to work on different projects like the carbon footprint, setting science-based targets. So over time, this has grown outside and inside the company. And at some point, I decided to share my experience. And so I have my blog at carlosanchez.eco. But as you're mentioning, I also use social media to spread my my experience and help others to also navigate the complex but also exciting area of sustainability.
Mm. So how complex is sustainability in the context of someone like PMI?
Well, working in the tobacco industry, it's a controversial industry. So you really need to work, and your skills have to be driving you into developing the best in class programs, and the data that you have to share has to be really precise, because otherwise you will be putting the company into risk. So you have to be very aware about this, but you have to understand also that each company, each sector is now facing different challenges. So if you think the toy industry is with the plastics, and if you think about the cement industry with the CO2 emissions, or if you think the conflict minerals in electronics that our telephones have. So each industry now is facing material topics that they are trying to solve. So it's been an exciting journey that we are driving. But for me, these challenges that we are facing today, like climate change or the plastics problems, it's something that cannot be solved by just a few companies that are in specific sectors. I think this requires a global effort by each of us, and then each of us are responsible for developing these sustainability programs in each company.
And how then, linking to that, how important do you think purpose is for business moving forwards and how that's defined?
Yeah, I think this is a topic that has evolved in the last few years. So for most of the years, companies has been focused, the focus has been to produce value for shareholders. So providing returns for shareholders was what is called the shareholder capitalism. Yeah. But these days we see that because of the growth of intangible assets that are very sensitive to all the environmental, social, and governance topics, companies are repurposing their objectives and their mission statements. And they are more focused on creating value not only for shareholders, but also for other stakeholders like employees or their suppliers, or even considering the impact that the products have in the regulation. So I think purpose is very important, and creating their own ESG story for every company is now a priority for most companies that are facing the public. And this has implications in the programs that are in the way that they are developed. So it's very important to understand which topics are material for your stakeholders, and also to develop your own ESG story, so that when you explain to the world why do you exist and where are you going and how you're going to make it, it comes as a natural story.
Yeah. What? How do you see the difference between an ESG story and sustainability story or sustainability strategy? How would you kind of explain the difference between those two things?
Well, you can find many definitions, but for me at this point, ESG and sustainability are becoming similar terms. There's no difference. So ESG is for me a way to divide how sustainability is explained in the three buckets. So you have a bucket for environment, another bucket which is for some people call it social, others they call it stakeholder, but basically it's the relation of the company with the external world and how they create value for all these stakeholders, not only shareholders. And then you have the governance, which is also getting very, very important. So we see how boards are taking accountability for ESG topics. So they are adding oversight on this. We were discussing about the purpose, how important. So these topics are more and more getting importance in the world. So yeah, so this is my view on ESG versus sustainability.
Yeah, I agree. I can see it all kind of molding into one thing. It's certainly the way people refer to it. When traditionally ESG was more of a kind of financial services metric or process for kind of due diligence. But it is being used interchangeably more and more with just sustainability. So yeah, I think that's really interesting. So then I think the other area I've kind of followed you with interest is the way that you've been talking about ESG ratings. And we just recently launched a kind of white paper all around just to give an introductory view of ESG ratings and how they're likely to kind of evolve in the future. What's your kind of view on that plethora of rating systems?
No, look, we were discussing about the purpose. So the purpose defines basically how companies create value. And the shift that companies now focus on creating value for more stakeholders has changed the way that investors consider the value of the companies. So the point is that at this time, we have two challenges with ESG investing. ESG investing is growing very fast, so has gone from being a niche product to a mainstream product in terms of investing, at the point that most of the funds are not only considering ESG for their specific products, but also for the generic funds that they are creating. This is considered, and also with the providers of capital, and that they consider ESG factors when considering your risk. So, but the challenges that we have is, first of all, there's no lack of standard rankings. So I think there are more like 600 rankings, and the correlation is very, very low at this point. So you can argue that they are looking for different things, but there is also a point. So for example, maybe there is a ranking that is focused more on the social part than in the environmental. So that you could explain the lack of correlation. But also you have the problem of the quality and availability of the data. So if you have compared different sustainability reports, even in the same industry, sometimes you have challenges comparing which one is performing better. So there is a lack of comparability. Also, if you look at the amount of resources that are used for publishing the financial statements versus, which usually in a company of the size of a multinational is around a million or more than a million that they dedicate for publishing these reports versus the amount of effort and resources used for sharing non-financial information, which is maybe 50,000, 100,000 to get an NGO to put the seal on top. I think that is driving some of the reasons on why the quality is not there. So yeah, I think it's going to be a journey. Now that ESG is so important for investors and other stakeholders, this will push into standardization of frameworks and also on the ratings. And also maybe going into mandatory reporting of non-financial information will drive into improving the quality of the data.
Yeah, and because I think that's all really like good comments that the, especially that kind of variance between the typical financial reporting, annual reporting mechanism, and ESG reporting. And we get it quite a lot when we first start talking to companies, and they just say, "Well, we just want an ESG report," and because they think it's just a simple bolt-on maybe to what they do. But if they, you know, you really want to, if you're a multinational organization operating in all these different areas with varying supply chains, that's actually quite a big task to do properly anyway. And there's also this kind of movement away, isn't there, from you mentioned integrated reporting to not just saying here's our normal report and then a bit of sustainability or ESG on the side. It's that integrated view. And I think that's something that you guys at PMI have really worked on this year, isn't it? To really get that kind of integration across the report.
Yes, I mean, I'm not representing PMI in this podcast, but I can give my opinion in general of these trends. And of course, when 90% of the value of the Standard & Poor's 500 is based on intangible assets that are very, very sensitive. Intangible assets, we talk about like human capital or a relation with your customers or the IP. These topics are really subject to ESG issues. So then it's becoming, non-financial information is becoming critical for companies to be assessed by the investors and the capital markets. So I think the level of rigor of this data has to be increased, and also the availability of information. And when we talk about availability, it's not only to provide this data in a format that can be used by investors, but also to provide the material data that they are expecting from you. So that's why integrated report, I think, is a good tool. You present the financial and non-financial information with comments from management on how they see the performance and how they see ESG issues affecting or opportunities in the area of ESG. And yes, and then other frameworks and standards that are getting very, very also popular are SASB, that allows you to really focus on what is important in your sector. And TCFD, which is also pushing from the investor side. And GRI, which is the de facto standard that everybody is using to report all impacts.
Yeah. So there's the sustainability accounting dimension there. You mentioned GRI is a kind of standardized framework or set of metrics. To go with this area. So it is coming, isn't it? There is that movement towards finding kind of standardization here and materiality. Now, from your perspective and things that you hear about and when you speak to companies, what are the big three issues at the moment that you see companies kind of grappling with how to do better?
So on the one hand, it's this materiality. And we have to understand that materiality is becoming is more and more dynamic. So when we talk about ESG, most of us at the beginning just think about the environment, so the E, and most likely into climate change. And it's clear, it's been for many years, and it's a clear risk for the survival of the human species on Earth. So, but over time, and mostly with the impact of COVID-19, many of the subjects or the issues related with social, like diversity and inclusion or human rights, are becoming more and more important, and companies are really taking this this area. So materiality, I think, is one of the topics, and there is a discussion on whether the materiality has to be the one related with the value creation of the company. So when we talk about SASB and TCFD, they are really focused on, or integrated reporting, they are focused on investors. This is the audience. So they think of materiality on how this type of topics could impact the value creation of the company. And then you have the EU, for example, talking about the double materiality, which is how the operations of the company impacts the world in terms of environment, social, and governance. And sorry, environment, so people, planet, and profit.
Yeah.
So I think it's complementary, and we will see how this evolves. But materiality is one of the topics. The other one is standardization. So we see IFRS announced the creation of the sustainability standards board, and this could be the beginning of the standardization. So there is a lot of dialogue these days on how they will drive a common standard that will set the minimum for every company to report. So you see also Europe with the EU taxonomy and also the SEC are showing their interest in finding these standards. So I think this took like 30 years the financial world to agree on the on their financial standards that we are using these days. So hopefully we will not take 30 for sustainability frameworks and standards to be selected.
Yeah, it is. You can see the regs coming from Europe, like the SFDR, the financial disclosure regulations, sustainable financial disclosure regulations, and the kind of onus that's pushing on business on investors to be more transparent on the way they look at ESG in the investment decision making process, but then how they actually kind of monitor that in their assets at the same time, which is a really interesting kind of area. Now, one of the negative things I've seen with this big kind of rise in SRI is big banks and big organizations talking to us about impact funds and how SFDR will impact them without actually defining what the impact of the fund is going to be. So because they know that they can access capital because they know everybody wants it, it's like the second thought is what the impact's going to be. So it's almost like, well, as long as it's holistically good, we're okay. And to me, that's just really lazy, and it's looking at the thing the wrong way around. What's your view on that? You know, because there is a lot of money out there wanting to go in good places. But is there going to be genuine purpose behind how it's deployed?
Look, I think, the market is not perfect. So we have rating agencies with low correlation, the data that is not available, lack of standards in frameworks. But despite that, there are millions of people investing trillions in sustainability and ESG funds. So I think this is a good signal that is driving the ESG into the agenda of politicians, into the companies, into investors and asset managers that are developing the funds. So I think we need to be positive on this. Will it be the case of greenwashing and the company sides try to show something that they are not doing, or in the investor sides putting labels to products that they are really not doing anything? So yes, there will be, but I think this is more and more getting as a risk going to that area. So you see companies that have done claims in net zero, and now they are facing backlash because everybody says this is not creating any impact in the world. So I'm positive about this is something that over time will get solved, and we will see action more coming.
I agree. I think greenwash was easier to pull off when there was an uneducated audience at stake, or an audience that wasn't passionate about sustainability. Now people are asking more questions, drilling into the detail, trying to understand the subject more. It's not going to be as easy to get away with greenwash. And also that other move we're talking about towards transparency and accountability is a perfect fit of those two things. So it will be difficult. It will have to be defensive. It'll have to be data-led to kind of discharge your kind of compliance in those areas. Hopefully there'll be nowhere to hide, basically, on that front. It's a fascinating world, and it's fascinating the pace that it's gathering. You mentioned, you know, back in 2015 and starting those projects, and all these terms have been around since then and since kind of the 2000s, really. But the momentum that they've gained over the last kind of 4 or 5 months in particular has been incredible, hasn't it?
Yes, and what is important is what you were mentioning before, is that people now feel the need of creating this positive impact at their work, at their own lives. So they change their consumption habits. So some people work on the food to buy local or healthy. Others, they decide to buy sustainable fashion. So I think there is a move that is now difficult to stop, and it has the goodwill to produce and a positive impact. And I think what is important is also that people get informed and learn about the subject. It's a subject that evolves very fast and very wide, so you cannot know about everything. But just choose an area that you want to learn. I think your platform is great into that, because you can choose really all the topics and really work on those that you are more interested. And then try to create an impact in your own private life, at work, developing your skills for a career in sustainability. And I think this is going to be very exciting, with many people joining this area.
Absolutely. I think, we're seeing huge kind of growth in the interest in sustainability. You know, we've always done a lot around learning, and it's often been the people with some knowledge that have taken the more learning rather than people coming into it fresh. And I think with those alignments we were talking about earlier, with it not being financial information and environmental or social information, and that integration, ultimately everybody's going to have to be a sustainability professional in some way in the future, because that's what the balance is, that's what we do. And it is complex, multifaceted area. We know we've been doing it 20 years, right? It's hard, it's pretty tricky, but you can get a general appreciation quite quickly as well from some good reading and some good interactive kind of content, and just listening to things like you talking, Carlos, as well. So I think more of that, definitely. Let's get into some of the fun bit now, right? Let's get into you and your songs. And I've had a great time listening to those this morning while I was doing my work. And so we've got 7 songs that you've chosen. We've got you've gone against the rules and not selected the box set, which I like. And you've taken the gadget in the form of an object. So I like how you're pushing the boundaries of the theme here. It's good. So let's kick off with the songs. And the first song you've chosen is a song called Society by Eddie Vedder. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Hey, look, Eddie Vedder is the singer of an American band that I love. It's Pearl Jam. And this song is quite interesting for me, because it's the soundtrack of a movie that is called Into the Wild. Yeah. Where you have, it's based on a real case of a boy that is kind of a dreamer and that finally dies trying to look for true happiness. And he finds that this is only happening when you are surrounded by others. But what I think is also reflecting to me is how the greed and the society that we had before has taken us into the problem we have now. So I like this song in the sense that it reflects, that allows me to reflect on how happiness is not related with material stuff, but it's more about the people around us and how society needs to change and to improve the happiness of people living there.
Yeah, I remember that film, Into the Wild, and that's spoiler alert there, but The scenery is beautiful, isn't it? And that whole, the kind of where he travels to and where he goes and how he engages with the different communities is interesting from that sustainability perspective as well, right? So, but yeah, lovely film. Sad, but lovely film. And the next one is, I've had this one three times in a row because it's so good, is a bit of Guns N' Roses and Welcome to the Jungle. So what's inspired that one?
Yeah, look, when I wrote the article about the status of the ESG ratings, that at this point is kind of a zoo, I thought about this song, or Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah.
It's really going to take some effort to reduce the 600 ratings that we have now into something more simple. So I think this song reflects a little bit my feeling about the current situation on ESG. So hopefully it will be fixed, but at this point it's quite a mess, I would say. And everybody, including investors, companies, and everyone, understand that this is not going to be sustainable. So over time, will be fixed. So I dedicate this song to that.
Yeah. What's the answer? What is the answer?
No, it's just a journey and time, but it's going to be very fast. So, yeah. And I think COP26 this year in November is going to be a historical moment. There are many initiatives that are going to be aiming this date to announce something. So we have, for example, the Science Based Target Initiative announcing the offset guidance that will drive all the net zero commitments. And we have also the IFRS committing to present something before COP26. So, and also we have the NDCs of the countries that are being revised, like the US, that they revise their targets and carbon neutrality. So I think this will be finally a pivotal year, as you were mentioning.
Is that explains why Biden put the 120 days to get the plan together for the right? Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense. Are you gonna go to the conference?
Who knows? I mean, these days we do all remotely, so
true.
It's been long that I haven't been traveling. So we are in our company with all travel frozen. So let's see.
We'll see. Yeah, I went for one of my first business meetings. Yesterday, and I drove there, and I drove 120 miles there and 120 miles back, and I thought, you know, it was lovely to do that, but there's 4 hours I've just wasted. I could have been working. so kind of come on driverless cars, that's the next step. I know you'll say, why didn't you use the train, Dan? But I couldn't from where I was and where I needed to get to. Next one anyway. Quick, I'll dig myself out of this one. So the third song, Spanish song, by Chambao. So this is an origin song, right? This is why you like this one.
Yes, I mean, my father is from the south of Spain, from Andalusia. And then this sound of this group is reflecting a little bit. It's a chill out from south of Spain. But this song is also a recognition for a crisis that they are suffering now in south of Spain with immigration. So 8,000 people climbed the fences and swam from Morocco to Ceuta, which is a little city that is in Africa also. So, but what this song is about is exactly about that, the drama of people that need to leave their houses and just try to dream to arrive to Europe, and then they just risk their lives to get there. So that's why I chose this song. I think when we think about the COVID, we just think on how we are locked at homes. There are people that are suffering much more. And so this song is reflecting that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fourth song is a song called Love Thing.
Yeah, this is based on my hobbies. One of my hobbies is playing guitar. I mean, these days I don't have much time to play guitar. And Joe Satriani is one of these virtuosos that play amazingly guitar. And it's not only that skills, but also it's the feeling that he can put in the guitar. So I think this is a very relaxing song and I love it.
And speaking of good guitars, the next song, Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana, classic.
Yeah, look, for those that are not in the Generation X, they might not even know the group, or maybe they have heard the song, that this is a kind of the song that that made Nirvana move the move of grunge into the mainstream, and it's kind of an hymn or let's say a song that defines our generation. So they really transformed and became an anthem for a full generation. This song,
I think most kids that would have gone to school in the 1990s would have that one on their list for sure, right? So an amazing song. And then we're going into French for the next choice. So On écrit sur les murs, Kids United. So what's that? It's a lovely song. I've not heard it until this one. What's that? I don't really understand the words. So what's it about?
It's talking about the future and different things. I mean, it was my kids coming with this song from school. And I put this song because it reminds how my little boy last year, he shared at school, look, my dad works saving water and it was so deep for me to hear this, that he has shared that at school, that I felt really, really proud to be working on sustainability. And what I feel about this song is that the new generations are coming with sustainability embedded in them. So they have heard this from us. And also it's for us to understand why we are doing this sustainability. We are not doing this to have a career or to sell more. I think some of what we are doing is because we want a planet that is in good conditions for them. So let's not forget that when we work on sustainability and why we are doing this.
Yeah, that's the whole point, so that they can have meaningful lives and improve things, right? So it did feel like that for a while, that we're battling so hard just to try and hold our position rather than make it better, you know? And the kid, we actually just need to make it better, right? In so many ways. But yeah, my daughter is exactly the same, and she describes herself as an eco-warrior, which I thought was brilliant. She's only five, but it's great when you hear that kind of coming out of their mouths and asking the inquisitiveness. I don't think we had that. You know? Well, I didn't have it as much, I don't think, as they do. So yeah, it's really, really positive. And then the final song is Big Yellow Taxi, and you've chosen the Counting Crows version over the Joni Mitchell version. So
yeah, I chose the Counting Crows, but the background is the same. So I chose this song because, you know, sometimes you have a group that you like and with many songs, but you don't stop to listen to the lyrics or the meaning behind. So the other day I was discussing with a colleague, Mariana, which is one of our experts in water stewardship in the company. And I said, look, I'm looking for songs for a podcast. And she said, you need to put this one. And I say, why? And then she explained to me the background on how this is about, that we don't care about things until we lose them. And also the environmental impact that our activities have. And then this is something that they explain. And they say that they pave paradise and to put up a parking lot. And this is exactly what this song reflects to me. So we are in that desert island that everything has been destroyed. We should think on how at that point is when we realize how much we care about the planet. And
it's too late. Yeah, when it's too late, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. That's the whole thing, exactly.
I mean, it's a sad group. Counting Crows is not very, let's say, it doesn't bring you a lot of joy, but I think sometimes you need this type of music when you feel low, and that's the group that I use when I'm not feeling very inspired, and this allows me to feel better.
Yeah, Radiohead usually does that one for me. Put on OK Computer or something, listen to that. Yeah, I'll feel better after that. It can't be that bad, is usually the way I think of it. Even though I love that album. It's amazing. So, well, linking to the kind of the love of outdoors as well, I think mountain biking was you chose. That's a great gadget or thing to have, you know. And so, do you do a lot of mountain biking?
Yeah, look, I love mountain biking. I mean, I like cycling, but mountain biking is my sport. So I belong to a team here in Switzerland, and we go very fast up and crazy downhills. So, and I like this sport because first of all, it requires you to train on fitness, but also you require technique so that you don't fall. So it's also an opportunity that I have friends in a hobby that I love. So if I'm in that ice line, I can imagine there will be mountains, and
yeah,
I would like to love my mountain bike.
Oh, cool. So have you done that since you're a boy as well? Have you always mountain bikes, or is it a recent thing?
No, I started with road cycling when I was 14.
Yeah.
Then I left the bicycle altogether when I was 21 because I wanted to go to the university and working. And then I took it when I was older. But now the passion is this school. I mean, it's I find it so exciting that I'm teaching my kid on doing downhill, and it's really great.
But you hold yourself, being a bit older, Carlos, with all due respect, do you hold yourself back from your younger self? Your 14-year-old self would have been ramping down the hills, right? Do you feel yourself holding yourself back on a mountain bike, or do you just go for it?
Well, it's sometimes it's scary. But it's also a way to see how far you can go. So sometimes when there is a very technical downhill, you have two options. It's to get frozen there in front, or say, okay, so let's go one step further. So now I have improved a lot. And also there is something that people don't understand, is that when you do skiing, everybody takes classes. Yeah. And when you do mountain bike, of course, if you're going just to go around the lake, you don't need anything. But when you're doing mountain biking, you should take classes. So that's what I did. And also learning from other people, it's very important. And also use protections. So
yeah. So it's great for where you're based in Switzerland, aren't you? So that's a great position where you are to get into the mountains. It's perfect. Yeah. So cool. And then finally, there's a box set option, but you've declined because of the addictive nature of box sets, right? So yeah. What caused that?
I mean, I haven't done many series, but it's so easy to get hooked on this type of series. So I've done like 24 Hours or Breaking Bad or Money Heist. I mean, I was so engaged, I couldn't stop watching the... So I will not take this to a desert island. So I also watched Lost. I think I watched like 3 seasons and totally hooked. And then at some point I say, ow.
Yeah, so, I did that as well with Lost. I went really quickly and I was like, oh, I can't take it anymore. I've done too much to myself.
Not to get out of this, because it's so easy to do one. Okay, I will watch another one and another one, another one. No. So I declined the box set, although this was one of the rules, and I decided to choose just one movie. So yeah, the movie that I chose is called 100 Meters. It's a Spanish movie. And I chose it because it's a type of movie that talks about effort and sacrifice and to achieve your objective, which is very embedded into my personality. So the movie is a true story again about a person that has a multiple sclerosis diagnosis, and when he gets the disease, he gets the advice for some people saying that in 1 year you will not be able even to walk 100 meters. So, but the guy is not only stopping himself, but he decided to finish an Ironman, which is one of the toughest sport event that you can sign up, and he's able to finish it. And it's been, I think, 10 years, and then still he's doing a lot of marathons and stuff. So it's not, again, spoiler alert, I told the finish, but
yeah,
really good to see the process that he follows. And I also think that each of us at some point have this type of I don't know if it's bad luck or something in life that leaves you really down, and you need to just keep on fighting, and at some point you will get over it, and no matter what others say, just follow your path.
Yeah, there'll always be people telling you can't do it and it will fail or it won't work. Choose to listen to that or not. Don't ever live in regret of not trying. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch that film. I looked at that before you mentioned it, so I'm looking forward to that. That might be for tonight, actually. Sort of Lost box set. So Carlos, so just before we go, a huge part of what we do at Rio is that education piece is And also hoping to kind of inspire people to work in sustainability or be kind of sustainability practitioners. What kind of words of advice could you give people that are looking to kind of get into this area themselves? Any kind of good tips that you'd like to share?
Yeah, look, the first tip that I would say is first educate yourself. So it's good to listen to the news, but you need to really dedicate time to understand different issues that are in the world about climate change, water scarcity, human rights, and then choose an area that you really can have a passion for it. So maybe you are really good on non-financial accounting. This is something what you really like. Or maybe you just want to work on the reforestation because you like to be involved in the process of working with nature. And also the last one that I would say is dedicate your life for continuous learning. Sustainability is a topic that is evolving every day. And a topic that was not relevant 1 year ago now is in the news. So this I would say are the three advices that I will give.
That's perfect. Look, Carlos, thank you so much for your time today. For anybody that wants to listen to Carlos's choices, we've got them on Spotify and Apple Music. You can listen to this podcast obviously on Apple and on YouTube as well. You can watch the video. So hope you enjoyed today's session. Carlos, again, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Daniel, for having me.
Cool. Take care.
With the show, it's really interesting, and I recommend to watch your other podcast because it's also very inspiring to hear from others.
Really appreciate that, mate. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Bye. Ciao.